Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit SurreyFarms.com. Broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. Listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby, broadcast live to the cosmos on the Heritage Radio Network.
Welcome to another episode of Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby. My co-host and producer is Sophie Schlesinger.
Hi, everybody.
And today we are very pleased to have with us on the show Giannicles Caldwell, who is a woman who wears many hats, but she is an author, she is a cheesemaker, she is the owner of Folia Farm in Rogue River, Oregon, and she's the author of two really wonderful books, The Farmstead Creamery Advisor, which came out, published by Chelsea Green in 2010, and more recently, the book Mastering Artisan Cheesemaking, which Chelsea Green just put out this fall. So thank you so much for being with us, Giannicles. We're honored to have you.
Hi, Sophie and Anne. Thank you very much for having me.
So how do you do it all? Have a farm, you make cheese, you've written two books. That's a pretty impressive project list.
Well, yeah, I'm definitely not doing it alone. Let's put it that way. I have a great support system in my family, so yep, and some nice help that way for sure.
That's really great. And so I noticed I was reading a little bit about your background. You had mentioned that you had an art background before you got into cheesemaking. Can you tell us a little bit about what led you down the path to become a cheesemaker?
Yeah, well, we built our farm on part of the land I grew up on, and on that land, 220 acres, we grew all of our own food, including dairy, and I had dairy cows. And then when we moved away from here, and my husband, I followed him around in his Marine Corps career, I was a nurse first for 6 years, and then went into the art area, which is something I'd always wanted to do. And during that time, made our own yogurt and whatever dairy products you could make with store-bought milk. And I was hoping to again have a cow someday. And when I started looking into having a cow again, our youngest daughter was wanting to be involved in the project, and she was just a little bitty 8-year-old girl, and started to look at her next to a cow and think, that's probably not going to work very well. So we started looking into goats, and I had that stereotypical cow person's view of goats and thinking that they weren't quite up to par. I admit it. But after having them for a very short time, I realized they're very wonderful creatures, and their milk was amazing, and the cheese I was making was, everybody loved it, and you know, there's nothing more gratifying than feeding people and have them being happy. So that's what kind of led me to cheese, and then when Vern got ready to retire from the Marine Corps in 2005, we started trying to find a way to come back to some of this family land. And we were just starting then to hear a little bit more in the general press about artisan cheesemaking and farmstead cheesemaking. And even though I grew up on the farm, the notion still sounded slightly romantic. Maybe because I'd been away from it long enough to forget. But
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so it became a way for us to come back to this land.
That's amazing. And so when you were first, I feel like the thing that makes your book so distinctive and interesting in the marketplace is the fact that they each really feel, they fill a niche that is very practical, and very useful, and just something that wasn't available before you wrote these books. So just talking about, you know, this most recent book, what were your first resources when you began making cheese?
Oh, gosh, yeah, my first resources when we, and it seems like such a long time ago in some ways and such a short time in other ways, but in 2003, there were just really two cheesemaking books of any note, and the first one I got was disappointing, and the second one I got was Ricky Carroll's home cheesemaking book, and I still feel it's one of the most best foundation works, and her book and her company, New England Cheese Supply, really made the cheesemaking world accessible to both home cheesemakers and people wanting to make something other than industrial cheddar. So those were my first resources for that. And then, of course, the internet was becoming more available in the early 2000s and late 1990s. So that was a resource also. And then you started seeing a few kind of glamour cheese books out there with beautiful photographs of cheeses around the world. And I actually, those were one of the biggest inspirations. I would just sit and look at those pictures and wonder how they made those cheeses. And why did they look so different from what I had been raised on, which wasn't Velveeta, but it also wasn't anything like what we make here now. So those were how we got started.
That's great. And so from there, I mean, so you built your education. You're pretty much self-taught at the beginning. And then I believe I read you took a, or maybe it's in the foreword part of your book, you took a workshop with Peter Dixon at a certain point and were able to attend some other workshops. Can you tell our listeners about how those kind of augmented your cheese knowledge?
Yes. Yeah, Peter Dixon, who is, you know, one of the U.S.'s probably best known farmstead cheese instructor. I took a workshop from him, and one of the best things about that workshop was it took place at somebody else's farmstead creamery. So during that time, I got to help with the milking, work in a small cheese making space, and start developing some ideas of what would work for me and what would work for our scale of production or our goal scale. And, of course, as you pointed out, my first book, there wasn't any information out there in print consolidated into one volume of how to do this. And so between his workshop and visiting some other generous cheesemakers that were kind enough to let me come visit, and I took a workshop back east also, we started to work on our plan. And again, it would have been nice to have a book where all that was out there, but luckily I also got the chance to write that book.
So, can you tell us a little bit about, I want to talk about all of your work. So can you talk a little bit about the Farmstead Creamery Advisor and what that book, what was the goal of that book, and what can people find in that book?
Right. Well, the goal of that book was to be a resource for people wanting to build a small on-farm cheese company. When I say small, I mean under maybe 50 goats or 20 cows. So a very small focus. And bless Chelsea Green's heart for deciding that was worth publishing, because that is a, you know, even then it was a narrow niche, and it probably will always remain somewhat commercially narrow in the book sales department. But once we got into business and were successful with our cheese, we experienced what a lot of farmstead cheesemakers experience, which is being inundated by calls of other people wanting to do the same thing and just filled with questions, and really good questions. But at that time, you find out that you have very little time to even, you know, do your invoices and pay your own bills, much less coach people. But during the winter, there is some extra time, and I'd always wanted to write a book. Fancied that I would one day write fiction, and come to find out that I'm a little bit better at this. And it's also very, unlike the art world, it's really nice to provide something that a lot more people can identify with, and help them. At this point in my life, the helping part feels really good.
It's funny. I came from an art background as well, and I found the same thing, making cheese. You know, I was like, oh my gosh, here is this thing. The process is so similar, and yet it's so much more accessible. You don't have to have a fancy degree to understand what's going on. You just have some taste buds, and you say to yourself, okay, great. I like it.
Yeah, you can still be true to your art through the cheese. Whereas if it's a more personal form of expression, like two-dimensional or sculpture, you're showing a part of your soul that not a lot of people may be able to identify with.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and so that's, so I feel like you've taken on kind of a dual role then, because, you know, you're a business owner and you're a writer, but you're also now sort of one of the foremost educators for this type of small scale business. Do you feel like the success of the book has taken you away from the cheesemaking, or has it enabled you to just put that out there and then pursue the cheesemaking, you know, sort of even better than before?
Well, I think maybe I must be an ADD person, because having a lot of things going at once is always very satisfying to me. So, yeah, we're definitely still just as involved here. It's just my husband, myself, and our daughter doing most of the work. And what's happened, though, is instead of it being just me making cheese, it's now my husband and I making cheese. So we've, the whole business started out without any sort of a plan as to who was going to do what. And I'm sure we're not alone in that, but it's also been a wonderful lesson in how things can evolve organically to meet the goals of the business when everybody is on the same team. So because we are vested in this as a couple, it's just evolved over time as to who does what. And like today we made cheese, and Vern got the vat started. He cleaned the vat and got the big heavy milk cans in, poured into that. And while I finished up a couple things with the outside chores, cleaning pens. And then I went in and I did the affinage in the aging room, which takes quite a bit of time. Mm. And so we have all naturally rinded cheeses. And then I came out and I took over the cheese vat after wiping all the dust mold off my coat, of course, my lab coat. And then he took over cutting up cheese for the farmer's market tomorrow. Then he went to town to run errands, and I flipped cheeses and did emails and awaited your call.
Sounds like a very well choreographed dance.
Yeah.
Pardon?
It sounds like a very well choreographed dance.
Yes. Well, and that's what I think it's kind of slowly gotten to be. And I think that's something to encourage people to expect, in that things will always be changing in a small mom and pop, if you will, organization, and to be open to that and just remember that everybody's, like I said, playing on the same team and supporting each other.
And so can you give our listeners a little bit of an idea of what, you know, what types of cheese Folia Farm makes, and where do you sell, and how you run your business?
Right. Folia Farm, we make a whopping probably 300-400 pounds of cheese a month. We milk only about 30 to 40 goats, and they're in, on top of being just goats, they're Nigerian dwarf goats, which means they have very rich milk but not as much as a big dairy goat. So we make cheese 2 to 3 times a week. We do only raw. We're completely off the power grid and make our own power from solar and a little bit of micro hydro in the winter. And that being off the grid and having to be responsible for our own energy usage has dictated much of our process, including, you know, a lot of things being done in more of a, we call ourselves high-tech primitive. Does that help? Yeah, so we make, like I said, raw aged cheeses, natural rinded. We make about 4 regular cheeses, and then because of this second book where I had to make, you know, every cheese that's covered in there, we make what we now call book cheese, and it's just whatever I feel like making at the time, and then that just goes to the local farmer's market. When you sell to cheese counters, as you probably know, it's a good idea for a small producer to not have too much in their product line. So we keep our main cheeses to go to counters, and then the cheeses that we make to fight repetition and boredom are go to the farmer's market. And there your customers typically get very excited to see something new.
And they hear, and they want to hear the story from you, of course, about why it's different and how it turned out. And yeah, get the whole sort of kit and caboodle.
And it's fun.
I think actually we've reached the midpoint of our show, so we're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, we'll deep dive into talking about your new book, Mastering Artisan Cheesemaking. So everybody, stay with us. We'll be right back on Cutting the Curd.
Everything she touches turns to gold, turns to gold, turns to gold. And everything she touches turns to gold. She's all alone, she turns to gold.
She turns to gold.
This is Sam Edwards from Virginia with SurreyFarms.com, proud sponsors of the Heritage Radio Network.
Shadow is only a matter of time before it catches you. Everything she touches turns to gold, turns to gold, turns to gold. And everything she touches turns to gold. She's all alone, she turns to gold.
She turns to gold. Finds herself on the brighter side. Looks for ambition in a snow-covered night. With the face of an angel and the mind of a child. Everything
And we are back on Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby. My co-host is Sophie Schlesinger. And today we are chatting with Giannicles Caldwell, who is the owner of Folia Farm, and most recently, well, the author of several books, but her most recent book is Mastering Artisan Cheesemaking, which was recently published by Chelsea Green. Definitely check it out. Anyone who is interested in learning to make cheese or learning what makes cheese, what it is, should pick up a copy of this book because it's really fascinating stuff. So Giannicles, we were talking a little bit in the first segment about, you know, you starting your business and identifying this hole in the market for a how-to book for how to start a business.
Right.
How did you envision this second book?
Well, I'm glad you asked that. For quite a while, I kept waiting for someone else to write it because I knew it needed to be out there, but I didn't feel like I was the one. There are so many other people who've been doing this for so much longer than I have. And then through various conversations and things, I realized that if those people wanted to write it, they would have, or they still could. So I thought, you know, I really want to learn this stuff. I'm going to go ahead and give it a try. And part of the joy of writing a book that you don't necessarily understand the topic as thoroughly when you start your research, it's almost like a senior project or a degree project or something where you know you can learn it, and then it becomes your job to do the research, put it all together, and organize it. And frankly, for me, that's how I was able to learn it. And it was almost a selfish act.
Well, I mean, a selfish act that is going to benefit countless generations of cheesemakers to come.
Yeah.
It's really exciting. I have to say, in reading it, I made cheese briefly, on various farms before I opened my store, and I thought I had a pretty good handle on cheese making. And even, you know, just the first chapter diving in, I was like, whoa, I learned all these new things in the first five pages or so. It was just very exciting.
And that became a challenge for me too, because I ordered all these academic books, you know, all the big textbooks that they use in university, and not only did the first few pages I read, it sounded like a foreign language to me, but I also, as I started understanding, I realized, where do you stop? And I constantly had to remind myself with this book that there was a point where you had to stop digging into a subject because it would both not be pertinent to most cheesemakers that would be reading it, and it would lead to confusion, not least for myself. but it was helped me develop a lot of respect for the research side, because they truly, there's so much that is still a mystery, and their understanding, and that's evolving, and that's part of what you hope to help cheesemakers understand, that you're working with something that's changing all the time, and you may not always get the answers that you need, but hopefully you'll be stimulated by the challenge.
Absolutely. And, oh, Sophie, were you going to ask a question?
Well, that's kind of exactly what I was going to ask, just to kind of keep going with what you were talking about. How did you filter the information, and what are some of, like, the, I don't know, broader themes that you think are most important when it comes to mastering cheesemaking?
Well, that's a good question. Let's see. The filtering, it was a bit of a challenge, but I took extensive notes and then tried to correlate all of those with other sources, you know, so I wasn't just using one source, and did find some conflicts, and then would bounce some of those conflicting theories or sciences off of some of my lovely readers that I've noted in the acknowledgments, you know, people with a much broader view of science and true PhDs and academics, and try to pare it down to what would make sense, and then had other lovely readers who are varying degrees in their, or varying stages in their own cheesemaking careers, whether that be just beginning or home cheesemakers or small artisans, and see how it read to them. As you probably know, the more you read it yourself, sometimes the less you understand, or you need those fresh eyes.
The less it makes sense. It's like saying a word over and over again. It kind of loses meaning.
Right. With the first book, Vern, my husband, has always been my first reader, and I tell people, and I'm not kidding, it's been a gross thing for me to have your spouse be your first critic and want to hear that criticism. it's like putting the pants on and saying, do these pants make my butt look big, and really wanting to know. it was a little hard, difficult at first, but he's great that way. So, he told me when my butt was too big. So
that's a good person to have on your team, for sure.
Yes, it is. That's what I say. Why I say it's not one person didn't do this alone.
Well, and so just to continue with Sophie's question, I guess, you know, filtering this information was a tremendous task. And I think one of the things that's very successful about your book is that you managed to phrase it in a way that's so friendly and so accessible to cheesemakers and cheese lovers of all sort of levels of skill. Can you talk a little bit about how, you know, your conscious desire to do that and make it, you know, down to earth rather than esoteric and academic?
Well, you know, maybe it's a mixed blessing that I didn't get to go on to university. I mean, in some ways, it keeps me, my learning abilities at the level of maybe most people. And I figure, though, you know, all of us are pretty smart, and there has to be a way to learn this without it overwhelming and discouraging you. And that's probably my filter, my built-in filter is helpful with that. I don't know if that's clear enough there.
But no, yeah, that's very clear.
Yeah.
Well, and so I was wondering also, I like the fact that you're teaching all these new cheesemakers, but you're also very mindful of teaching them well. Can you talk a little bit about the difference of the art versus the science of cheesemaking, and how you view the importance of knowing the science part?
Right. Well, I've always told people that even if you don't want to know the science, it's happening. So at some point, you're going to have to face that. And hopefully, once you do, you'll realize that's even more exciting. It's like learning to mix paints when you're doing a painting. You may not know, and it may sound intimidating at first, and then once you do, it opens up whole new worlds of possibility and challenge and excitement.
And so what would you say to somebody who's ready to take that first step and make cheese, you know, at home, or try to think about starting a farm? What would your advice to them be?
Well, as far as the making cheese goes, everybody's a bit of a different type of learner, and I don't want my book to be touted as the perfect book for every beginner, because it may not be. It may be a little bit too much, but hopefully it will serve as a resource and something to pull them on into that next level. I think you have to know your own learning style. If science is intimidating, there are great recipes and books, including Ricky Carroll's, that will help you get your feet wet in the milk, so to speak, and get you started. I sometimes think if I knew now then what I know now, I would have never started, because you wonder, how could it ever work out, because there are so many possibilities. So I think knowing yourself as a learner and having a lot of different resources, there are some great resources. Hopefully they're in the back of my book, for cheese social networks and forums where you can ask questions and get some peer support, you know, if you're not ready for a big book. And there are clubs, and there are so many things now. It's just amazing.
It really is.
It's your show too.
Oh, thanks. Well, yeah. We try to get the word out on Mondays. But so, can you talk a little bit about one of the things that I really enjoyed about your book as well was that you immediately stressed that cheese making is not just a step-by-step process where you say, first I do A, then I do B, then I get C, which means I move on to D. You really tackled sort of all the interchangeable parts of cheese making, I thought, in a really good way. Can you talk a little bit about how, like, what beginning cheesemakers need to know about that aspect of cheese making, that, you know, it's not as straightforward as you might think it is?
Right. Well, that's, again, where sometimes you have to start thinking it's straightforward and then find out later. But, you know, true cheesemakers, you never hear them saying they have a recipe. They have a make sheet and guidelines and goals because of exactly what you said as far as things being so changeable. And it's I wanted to have people be mindful of that throughout, and also in the fact that there are no set recipes. And there isn't, like, I'm sure you hear it all the time, oh, I love goat cheese. Well, there isn't a goat cheese. There isn't.
Yeah.
I say, well, I love good cheese, you know. That's the only kind of cheese I like. And it just, the infinite possibilities in throughout the process, but paring that back down to starting with simple steps and with some cheeses that are a lot more reliable in their process. Which is where most people start and get so excited. I remember the first cheeses I made, and, you know, Chèvre and quick mozzarella, and I thought that I had just, you know, worked a miracle. So it doesn't, the longer you've been making cheese, sometimes the more removed you get from the beauty of those first cheeses, but they're not to be forgotten. And a part of the fun of teaching beginning classes, which I for a long time thought I wouldn't want to still do, is reconnecting with that, the simple beauty of those, not only the process, but the product.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's great to hear that you're still so, you know, passionate about it. That's wonderful.
Yeah, I'm more than passionate. I'm kind of silly, goofy, teary. I get all Hallmarky and, you know, you feel the curds moving around in the vat and how they hit your hand, and that intuitive part, that was, I'd probably say, the main goal of the book is to have people know enough to become intuitive. And maybe that sounds like a backwards approach, but I think for these kind of things, you can develop that and be thinking on your feet.
I wholeheartedly agree. That's well, I'm so happy again that you came on the show. For all of our listeners, the book is called Mastering Artisan Cheesemaking. And do you have a preferred source for people to purchase this book, or how should people go about getting a copy?
I'm sure it would be the best thing for me to say to buy it directly from Chelsea Green, right?
That's a good idea. Yeah, Chelsea Green is a great publisher.
Well, Chelsea Green, and I do want to give them incredible, especially my editor, McKenna Goodman, incredible kudos, for helping the book properly, and amazing people.
That is great. And if people want to keep up with your other writings and things happening on the farm, you also have a blog, is that correct?
I have a blog, and we have a good website for our farm, so people can see the goats. We do a live webcam on our baby pens in the spring, so people can watch baby goats bouncing around. Yeah, we try to do all we can that way. Did you want? Yeah.
And so the website, what is your website? I'm sorry, I don't have that
the
right in front of me.
The website is Pholia Farm, Pholia Farm.com. And the blog is GiannaCleesCaldwell.wordpress.com.
Fantastic. And we're going to, your name is amazing and wonderful. And we're going to spell, we're going to tag that. So anyone who wasn't sure how to spell GiannaCleese, you can just visit heritageradionetwork.org and you will find her here. Well, thank you again for being on the show with us. We had a fantastic time and I can't wait to finish your book.
Thank you, Ann and Sophie.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
Thank you.
We'll be back next week with another episode of Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network.
Bye.
You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org.
You're listening.
You can find
to
all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and
You're
follow us on Twitter at heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.